Imagine a country fair where people once guessed an ox's weight for fun. When the scales broke, the guessing game became institutionalized. Analysts emerged to predict others' guesses rather than assess the actual ox. Mathematical models replaced observation. A massive industry of professional guessers, competition organizers, and advisors flourished. And amid this sophisticated infrastructure built around guessing, everyone forgot the fundamental purpose. The ox died because no one remembered to feed it. This parable brilliantly captures modern finance's fatal flaw, a system that has lost sight of its core purpose. Finance once existed to serve the real economy, allocating capital to productive uses, helping businesses grow, enabling homeownership, and securing retirements. Today's financial system has become dangerously self-referential, with most activity involving financial institutions trading with each other rather than serving households and businesses. The consequences are profound. When finance becomes disconnected from economic reality, capital flows to speculative ventures rather than productive investments. Innovation focuses on creating complex instruments that generate fees rather than solving real problems. And when the inevitable crisis strikes, the costs fall primarily on ordinary citizens while financial insiders protect their gains. In the 1960s, banking was conservative. The stereotypical banker resembled George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life or Captain Mainwaring from Dad's Army, community pillars who knew local professionals personally and maintained predictable routines. These bankers understood their customers' needs and the local economy they served. Within a generation, this world vanished. Finance became global through Eurodollar markets, petrodollar recycling, and Asian export surpluses funding Western deficits. Harvard MBAs replaced golf club networkers, with mathematical problem-solving valued over relationship building. The culture grew aggressively male and excessive, populated by sudden fortune traders and mathematics quants. The shift from relationships to transactions marks financialization's essence. While George Bailey maintained personal connections with customers, today's finance world operates through anonymous trading. 50 years ago, shares were held for 7 years on average. Today, high-frequency algorithms trade in milliseconds, fundamentally altering finance's social function and ethical foundation. The scale of modern finance is staggering. British banks hold assets worth 4 times the country's annual income. Foreign exchange trading dwarfs actual international trade by nearly 100-fold, and derivatives markets have values 3 times all physical assets worldwide. This closed circle of paper trading raises fundamental questions. What purpose does it serve? How can it generate profits? Logic suggests that continuous exchanges between the same parties shouldn't create new value, yet finance has become extraordinarily profitable. Financial crises follow a predictable pattern. Genuine economic change creates profit opportunities, herd mentality draws more money, asset mispricing worsens, sophisticated rationalizations mask emotional processes, reality eventually forces correction, causing large losses. Central banks intervene, inadvertently fueling the next crisis. The 2008 financial crisis exemplifies this pattern. What began as a genuine innovation, expanding home ownership access, evolved into complex mortgage-backed securities that few understood. Traders weren't evaluating actual mortgage quality, but guessing what other traders would think about these securities. Like buying a house not because you've inspected it, but because you believe others will pay more tomorrow. Except with financial instruments representing thousands of bundled mortgages. At a 2005 Federal Reserve symposium, economist Raghuram Rajan warned about dangers from financial innovation. Fed officials dismissed and ridiculed these concerns, with Larry Summers mockingly calling Rajan's views Luddite. Ironically, these same officials received promotions after the 2008 crisis they failed to predict. The financial sector's relationship with free market ideology proved remarkably flexible, embracing market principles during booms, but abandoning these convictions when self-preservation required government intervention. Modern financial economics treats risk as a tradable commodity like milk or coffee. This analogy fails when information asymmetry exists, when one party knows significantly more than the other about the true nature of the risk. Human behavior in financial markets is driven by narratives rather than probabilistic reasoning. Traders construct conviction narratives about why their positions will be profitable, reinforced through interaction with like-minded peers. While storytelling is inherently human, excessive dream chasing in financial markets becomes particularly dangerous when done with other people's money. Financial intermediation reduces transaction costs, manages risk, and creates efficient markets. However, some intermediaries create artificial complexity merely to justify their services. The distinction between trading, owning inventory, and agency, facilitating transactions for fees, is crucial in finance. Agency relationships typically form for high-value, idiosyncratic transactions with imperfect information. Finance traditionally operated on an agency model, with fiduciary duties legally obligating brokers and managers to prioritize clients' interests. Financialization shifted the industry from agency to trading, prioritizing transaction volume over client outcomes. Despite employing more sophisticated people with better technology, intermediation quality deteriorated because new skills developed around the intermediation process itself rather than end users' needs. Mortgage-backed securities traders knew securities but little about mortgages or home buyers. Derivatives traders understood complex instruments but not their underlying economic realities. The proliferation of complex financial products has created layers of intermediation that extract value while providing questionable benefits. High-frequency trading, exotic derivatives, and structured products often serve primarily to generate fees rather than facilitate useful economic activity. The obsession with liquidity in financial markets is largely self-referential. End users need some liquidity, but millisecond-level trading serves market participants themselves, not clients. High-frequency traders provide no capital, and their supposed liquidity vanishes during crises. Financial institutions expanding into market trading claim profits will come from having smarter traders, creating a logical paradox in what is ultimately a zero-sum game. Investment banks seek the edge. Their advantage comes not from superior economic knowledge, but from privileged information about other market participants' activities. Financial innovation frequently stems from regulatory arbitrage, structuring transactions to achieve identical effects while avoiding regulations. These practices transfer money to financial professionals while potentially increasing systemic risk. The industry's short-term profit focus creates fundamental problems in risk management. The trading room mantra, "I'll be gone, you'll be gone," perfectly captures the disconnect between short-term profit reporting and the longer timeframes of actual business projects. Allowing integrated financial institutions was a significant policy mistake. While one-stop financial shops offer some customer benefits, these are far outweighed by crisis costs. A resilient financial system requires returning to specialist institutions with focused functions. Reform should reduce complexity, lower costs, enhance stability, and improve information flow. Banks should concentrate on operating the deposit channel while maintaining safety. The current investment banking model creates conflicts that demand institutional separation. After the South Sea bubble burst in 1721, Chancellor John Aislaby was imprisoned for corruption. In contrast, after 2007-08, the most culpable figures retained wealth exceeding $100 million with minimal consequences. Today, authorities pursue corporations rather than individuals, contradicting principles of moral responsibility. Another financial crisis is inevitable, as underlying determinants remain unchanged while fragility increases. Current regulations address past crises, not future ones. The stakes are high. The Great Depression led to political disaster. Finance must return to its proper role, the serious business of managing other people's money for society's benefit, not enriching the financial elite.